At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, At the Races, and it is the first day of two-year-old racing in South Florida, and a perfect time to connect with Mike Welch, because there's also any number of horses that are running this weekend at Oaklawn on Saturday, the card drawn yesterday, and the Apple Blossom features three of the 14 that are coming from South Florida, Queen Nekia, Cookie Dough, and Point of Honor. Of course, Hidden Scroll kind of out of sight at Payson Park, but Hidden Scroll will contest the Count Fleet as well. And then there's a host of Florida-based horses that are preparing in earnest for the Arkansas Derby. So plenty to touch on with Mike Welch, who joins us now. Mike, everything good down there? Everybody healthy?
So far, so good. Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard any negative news about any of the people around, whether it's the backside, jocks room, press people or whatever. So knock on wood, it seems like so far everybody is coming through this okay.
Unbelievable. And it's pretty remarkable. And, you know, and one thing that has gone kind of underreported, or I don't know if it's been even publicly reported, Gulfstream has to pay a daily fine for running, for operating?
Yeah, that's what I heard, too. I heard it's a small one.
I'm
not sure the details on that. You'd have to ask Matt Haggerty. That's more his place than mine. I did hear that along the way, but I don't know. Someone said it was like 500 a day.
That's what I heard, 500 a day, yeah.
And I don't know what it's for. I really don't know, but obviously not very significant in the overall scope of the importance for, you know, all our horsemen here keeping this business alive down here through this whole thing.
Well, and really, in a lot of ways, I mean, there hasn't been the the focus. It really, the meet ended. A lot of people thought, oh, Florida Derby Day, that'll be it. And things have really just kind of continued on. I don't want to say it's business as usual, because obviously it's not. But I tell you, the continuity has got to be welcome, because where else would these horses be going?
Yeah, no, I mean, at least it gives this corner of the world the opportunity to, you know, the people involved here to keep their businesses afloat, and the people that are working to continue working on the backside. So this little economy anyway is kept alive. I mean, it's a disaster for those involved in this business, whether it be trainers, owners, or just backstretch people, you know, trying to make a living where they're being denied that to some extent now. I can't imagine some of these owners, whether they're in New York or California, you know, carrying a good many horses that have no opportunity to run them, you know, what kind of significant losses they're sustaining. And then, you know, you get to the point where trainers have to start laying off help, and that becomes probably an even worse situation because of the nature of the people that, you know, getting laid off. I mean, this is all they have, you know. I mean, some of those owners are well-heeled and can weather a storm like this, but you know, this is all these people have to survive on a daily basis. So I think it's crucial that they could get the things back up and rolling in New York, Kentucky, California, wherever, just to keep the those people involved here with some semblance of a life. I know, you know, that's just our corner of the world, and a lot of people are suffering the same kind of a situation in other industries. I can only talk for, you know, the people I know here, and they're grateful here. They're down on one knee, you know, at least being thankful that this situation is continuing the way it has.
Well, and the racing has been interesting. There's been, some of the predictable headlines, including on Sunday, the brush with a seven-figure giveaway in the rainbow.
Yeah, I mean, with the nature of the racing here now, these big fields, because everybody wants to try to run, and you know, the cheaper races, obviously a lot of cheaper races still here. We're still, you know, the condition book that we're operating under, the first condition book was written for barn area that was going to be the spring meet without the Chad Browns and Todd Pletches and all the other northern guys that are still here. So those are still the basis of the cards. And, you know, those kind of races just lend to unpredictable results, and you get a few unpredictable results in the midst of the Rainbow Six, and it's ripe to be hit. We've seen it before, and we'll likely see it again. Yeah, it came awful close on Sunday. You have to feel for the guy that was alive with that nine horse in the last race there. Turn it for home, it looked like he had it. And to get beaten back like that, that goes down into the list of bad beats, the all-time list of bad beats for $1.3 million there.
Unbelievable. Is there a projected force out already, considering that it's knocking on the door of seven figures?
I haven't heard any discussion about that yet. I don't know whether they're thinking about it or they're just going to roll the dice and, you know, let it go till the end of the meet. I just haven't had a chance to talk to Dave or Billy about that, but there's been no talk, and I'm guessing there will be none, at least for the near future. I mean, we're only 2 weeks into the meet, and look what it's already up to. So
it's nuts.
It's amazing how it grows. But you have to consider now they're about the only game in town.
Yep.
So
yep.
You know, people are focusing attention here a little more than they obviously normally would if Keeneland was running, New York was running. I think they had 760,000 in the pool on Saturday, which is an amazing number.
That is an amazing number. Well, the 2-year-olds are going to get started today, and motivated me to get you on here and cover off quite a few boxes to check. And there are some notable aspects to the way the 2-year-old racing is going to be administered starting today.
Yeah, right. No Lasix can be administered to these horses within 24 hours of the race, and all these horses have to officially celebrated their real second birthday before they're allowed to run. I know all 2-year-olds turn, all these horses turn 2 on January 1st, but today's April 16th. If they weren't born by April 16th or before, they were not allowed to run in this race, and that's the way it's going to be. You know, the pool of potential candidates will open up the further we get into the meet, you know, and into the calendar, but as of now, that's the way it is. You have to celebrate your second birthday. These horses have to by the day they're racing.
Well, and to be honest, I mean, when I saw that, when you wrote that the other day, I thought, that's a little, you know, I thought, then I realized, you know, in another 2 weeks, it'll be May, and you know, there's so few. I mean, there's a handful of May foals, you know, probably, I don't know, I'd say under 10% of any foal crop is a May foal or later. So they'll be able to run soon enough. And
I like the aspect of it because, in a way, it does protect these horses a little bit.
A little,
you know, from starting maybe prematurely. I like it better than the no Lasix. I think as far as the two goes, you know, for the protection of the horse, you protect them a little more by making them wait till their second birthday than by not allowing them Lasix for 24 hours. But hopefully it will turn out not to be a problem as far as the bleeding aspect of this goes, and we'll get through this change unscathed.
A couple of things about the 2-year-old, the 2-year-old landscape anyway, Mike, and that is, you know, with the Gulfstream sale, you know, not that was a big number of head, probably 100 head, but no April sale at OBS. In fact, I talked to Tom Ventura earlier this morning, and, you know, they're taking a wait and see attitude, hoping that, you know, their combined April June sale is going to work. And of course, Fasig announcing, I guess, this morning that they're going to take online bids, and, you know, they're getting perilously close to the spring sale, Timonium. I'm wondering how many actual 2-year-olds are even available right now to run.
Well, losing the early Florida sales will probably have more impact on a place. The Ocala ones probably have more of an impact on the racing here. They're losing the big sale here, the Fasig Tipton one, because those horses are more geared. Those are higher-priced horses. They're more geared to, you know, later in the year, Saratoga and New York and then beyond that. You know, so I think it will have some impact. I think there's also some pinhookers who couldn't, and I'm no breeding expert, so you might want to talk to Nicole more about this than me, but it seems like you've had some pinhookers who had horses pinpointed for those sales. Now they're not sure when they're going to be able to sell them, and at some point, you know, they're going to have to start running them themselves, and maybe send. This is the only place in town, right, or the game around, where they could run these two-year-olds if some of those happen to be ready to go. So you might see, you know, Pinhook is running two-year-olds out of McAllen more than, you know, the local trainers who would have purchased them at the sale and then bring them in here, you know, work them a few times and go. So, but that's, you know, again, I'm no breeding expert, but that's just the way, you know, I look at it. You might see that situation come up. You'll see some of these horses coming in off the farm now. And I'm guessing those that'd be the case in those scenarios anyway.
Well, the biggest part of this storyline today, $65,000 purse, too, a serious purse, 4.5 furlongs. These are fillies, the two-year-olds. And, of course, Wesley Ward represented with a horse that he actually bred. Mrs. Fitriani Hay owns. And this race also, Mike, features, if I'm not mistaken, that's got to be right on Curlin's first runner.
You know what? I'll take your word for that. I didn't really look that horse up that closely. I mean, look, Wesley is going to be the focal point of all these two-year-old races as we go forward. He's got another one in tomorrow. Who's probably, from what I hear, what I've seen of his work on tape and what, you know, I know that that horse might be close to 2-5. These horses, this horse and the one he's got in tomorrow, were both in Kentucky working there, and I'm guessing being primed for the early Keeneland races, and we know the success Wesley has on those early Keeneland races. He usually takes his best and most precocious ones and goes up there with them. So the fact that he's brought these back here to run here, you know, these are probably the most forwardly advanced and maybe the most precocious, the top five or six he thinks he's got right now. So they're going to be heavily favored, both of them, lined today and probably the one tomorrow even more so. Considering the breeding on that one tomorrow. So, you know, these races go through Wesley. If you can beat them, you know, you're going to get paid because they're going to be heavy favorites.
Well, and certainly when you look at this group of eight, are these two-year-old races limited to eight starters?
Yes, they are.
That of course, a fairly recent
safety. You know, it's a short run into the first turn going forward furlongs. I think it's for the protection of everybody that they do that. And I, if memory serves, I think they've always done that going 4.5 just for that reason. You have the two Arendelle horses who were well-prepared on the farm before they got here. A horse called Pretzel has only worked once here. Quinoa Tifa, who's worked twice here. A couple of the other Arendelle horses got here before them and have had 3 and 4 works already here, and then we'll see a couple of those tomorrow. So the Arendelle horses have a lot of bottom to them from what I could see watching them work. But, you know, stepping up to beat Wesley at this time of year is not going to be an easy task.
Well, it got a note as well that the only of the trainers beside Wesley Ward and Ralph Nix. Nix has got Awesome View for Fred Bry. Jacks Are Better, an awesome, of course, filly. But she's breaking from the rail. Every other trainer in here, David Rakoff, Lester Barbizon, Michelle Nihe, Javier Negret, and Juan Alvarado, none of them have a first-time starter win in the last 18 months.
You know, I didn't even look at that, but I guess you're right. Now I'm taking a peek at it real quick. Yeah, you're right. I mean, even more reason why Wesley is going to be, you know, I think this will also be 2-5 or 3-5, and like I said, I think the one tomorrow could be 1-5 from the advance notices and considering the breeding. I mean, he's out of the old Kathleen O'Connell horse. I'm trying to remember the name. Let me go look it up right here real quick tomorrow.
Wesley?
Golden Pal. Yeah, for Wesley. He's by Uncle Mo out of Lady Shipman, who is as fast
as
they come.
Yep.
Now,
how
the race
that?
Is on turf, but... And her good work that I saw on Express Bet came on the turf, but you can bet she could he could fly. And like I said, with that breeding and being Wesley in that field, I'm guessing 1-5 tomorrow, maybe 2-5, but not more
sounds,
than that. Yeah, no secrets here. But we do have workout reports in our clock report on most of the horses running in both races. We have seen most of them at least once, and actually most of them, 2 or 3 times, most of them out of the gate as well. They all have to get, obviously, gate approved to run. So you know, we do have that information for you.
Nice. And the action continues through the weekend. The Saturday card was drawn yesterday. No maiden race, I don't think, on Saturday. And, Mike, out of curiosity, do we know when Mike Lakow is going to card those stakes that he talked about, the three-year-old stakes a couple of weeks
ago? The three-year-old race is on April. It's going to be April 25th, next week, I believe, the three-year-old
okay.
Open stake race for the three-year-old filly race. He says is going to be in the next book. I think he's also got a older handicap race on the turf coming up. Not handicap, stakes race on the turf coming up. Not sure if that's next week. I think that might be the week after or something like that. Plus, we do have some regularly scheduled stakes on the schedule that do start on May 2nd as well. So he's just going to add these, dot them in where he can. There's going to be a couple of 5/8 turf stakes. I'm not sure of the dates. I haven't seen the next book yet. But the first one, if memory serves, will be that three-year-old race next week. And there's some pretty good three-year-olds hanging around here.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to see Tis the Law in there. You're not going to see Sol Volante in there. But there are some up-and-comers that wouldn't shock me. You know, just to get a race in the, under their belts now and set them up for, you know, whatever may come up 5-6 weeks down the road, as opposed to, you know, Tis the Law, Sol Volante, who are going to be idle quite some time before they run again, whenever they run again, wherever they run again. You know, there's just nothing out there, so you can't predict anything at this point. But there will be that race here next week, so it'll be interesting to see who lines up for that one.
Let's actually talk about three-year-olds for a second. And before even we do that, what is the status? I saw that there was an update yesterday from you about Paco Lopez, that the thumb is not broken.
No, it is broken. No, that
it
was
is
the latest
broken.
Update. It was broken, yeah.
Okay.
No, originally they thought the thumb wasn't broken, and then his agent called me. I lose track of the days now. It was a Tuesday morning, I believe. He went in for further evaluation on Monday. They discovered he had a small fracture on the base of his thumb, and they were going to do surgery on Tuesday, and he was thinking 4 to 6 weeks.
Wow.
He said without surgery, it would have been a lot longer recuperation
wow.
period. Yeah, so Paco's out for at least a month, it sounds like.
How about that? He's been a terror. He's been riding as good as he's ever ridden.
Yeah, he had the seven-win day a few weeks ago to join the pretty elite list there. In Gulfstream. So, yeah, I mean, with most of the New York riders now not riding here, we've got Tyler, we got Louis, obviously, Amiciel, Edgar, they're the kind of tops of the list in the room along with Paco.
The some of the horses, when it comes to those three-year-olds that are all seemingly headed to starts in the Arkansas Derby, you've been writing about Attachment Rate, Gouverneur Morris, King Guillermo, who looks like he is gearing back up, Sol Volante. So perhaps four or five horses coming from South Florida for the Arkansas Derby.
Well, I don't think Sol Volante is going. He has not
no?
worked in a month,
okay.
And I think they've pretty much ruled that out for him. Attachment Rate, I'm guessing he'll work again Saturday and Dale will make some decision. He was kind of on the fence the last time I spoke with him. King Guillermo looked terrific yesterday. Looks very fit. I mean, he galloped out super, a mile and 141 on a gallop out. Pretty about as good as it gets around here. So he's looking good for it. The Gouverneur Morris, I have not seen. You know, obviously he's up at Palm Beach down, so I'll have to wait until I know the reports of his last work. I did see Dave Norton make a comment that he liked the work, and Todd did too, but they were over the moon over his previous work, and you know, he just ran okay in the Florida Derby, but it looks like they're heading that way as well. So, I mean, that's for sure. King Guillermo, I'm going to guess Attachment Rate probably will go, and Gouverneur Morris. I think that's the only three, unless I'm forgetting someone, heading that way for the Arkansas Derby
okay.
at any rate.
All right. The horses that already headed out for this weekend, Hidden Scroll, who is at Payson Park, so nobody gets to see what's going on there. However, Point of Honor, Queen Nekia, and Cookie Dough, the three of them all part of that fascinating 14-horse Apple Blossom.
Yeah, I haven't seen Point of Honor either. Obviously, she's up at Palm Beach Downs as well with George Weaver. So I haven't talked to Dave about how she's been doing. The other two for Safi Joseph have been here. Queen Nakia working well, not out over the moon, but working well. Cookie Dough has always been a tremendous workhorse, and she's had a couple of very, very solid works here since her last start. Her last work, I wasn't as crazy about. I mean, arguably, Safi, you know, reined her back in a little bit. It's hard to rein her back in, though. Just was a little bit not quite what you usually see from her. So I'm not sure what to make of that last work, but the ones before that were her usual. I mean, when she's on top of her game, I mean, she's as good a workhorse as you'll see.
The horse that we should bring up, too, that was included, I saw a piece that you did, I think, yesterday as part of the King Guillermo coverage, because Trophy Chaser, who seems like a much better horse now as a four-year-old, he's going to compete in the Oakland Handicap.
Yeah, I mean, that horse got good and got good fast. I mean, but that it came with, A, maturity, the start of his four-year-old year, and also when they stretched him out around two turns, he comes off two big, easy victories, 102, 103 buyer. He won the grade three challenger, turning back the Todd Pletcher favorite. You know, he went a mile, six furlongs out a mile yesterday, too. Not quite as sharp as King Guillermo, but, you know, seems to be doing well, seems to be holding that form. I haven't looked at the race. I don't know what he's going to be up against there, but you know, seems like he's doing okay.
Interesting. Finally, Mike, while we're together, we did talk to Bill Kaplan earlier this morning, who paid tribute to Milt Wolfson. Wolfson, I mean, basically the whole time you've been down in South Florida since moving tack from New England, you covered Milt Wolfson and just, you know, 10 horses or so at Calder for years and years, and all he did was just, you know, win at the same rate year after year.
Yeah, and he bred a lot of those himself, and he was just a terrific guy. Yeah, I, you know, I've known him for a couple of decades now, and wasn't close friends, but boy, you felt like you were every time you went to see him. I wish every trainer was as good an interview as he was when you went to talk to him. The one thing I remember of Milt, the one thing that made him mad is when somebody would suggest that he and Marty Wilson were brothers. He just they weren't related, and he that suggestion came up at times, and he kind of I'm not his brother, I'm not his father. Some people thought he was his father, and he didn't like that either. But you know, it was a kind of a mystery ailment that had him wheelchair bound. I don't know, it seems like a couple of years now, but you know, even through that, you know, when his horses would win, he'd come out to the winner's circle. He was just a pleasure to talk to. And anybody that knew him really well, you talk to him, nobody had a bad word to say about the guy. It's sad that he's gone, but we're all the better for having him around here and having known him.
Well, and Bill Kaplan fought back tears, really, the whole conversation.
Yeah, he and Bill were pretty close. Doc Smolin, Phil Combest, Eddie Pleaser, you know, the guys that have been around here a lot longer than I have, known him a lot longer than I did. Nothing but good things to say.
Well, and, you know, I kind of prompted Bill to talk about, you know, what a wonderful place Calder was. I mean, you know, these days nobody has a clue. If you came to the game in recent years as a player or fan, you know, it's a punchline. But if you had been there in its heyday, you know, a beautiful, first of all, a beautiful paddock area and a vibrant clubhouse, a fabulous dining room on the top floor, barns that were beautifully shaded, and it wasn't Hialeah, but it was awfully nice at Calder, and so many horsemen spent their careers there. Really good horsemen.
Yeah, I can't say enough about how much I enjoyed my time there before. You know, obviously they're still racing over there, but it's definitely not the same. And you're right about the horsemen that have come through there. And I probably wasn't even there in its heyday. I don't know what you call its heyday back in the 70s and 80s before I got there. I mean, of course, obviously, there was some pretty good racing in the last 20 years that I was covering the races there. A lot of, you know, horses came out and they went on to win Breeders' Cup races and make a name for themselves nationally. And the Summit of Speed, when they first started it, back, I forget exactly the year, Mike Cronin and Ken Dunn and Bobby Humphrey, obviously can't forget Bobby being there. He was a great character and a terrific, terrific racing secretary. They put on some pretty good shows there, especially back in the day when it was the only, you know, there were no $500,000 sprint races back in those days anywhere, let alone in July. And the cream of the crop came down there, and a lot of those horses went on to win Breeders' Cup sprints. So, it was a great place, and Milt was an integral part long before I got there, and all the while I was there.
Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch, and the racing action continues today at Gulfstream. Just two venues to deal with today: 1 o'clock Eastern post time at Gulfstream, 2:05 at Oaklawn, the first two-year-old race of the year in South Florida, and 4.5 furlongs for the fillies, Wesley Ward, and others. We can, I think, confirm that Ride on Curlin's first runner, Sophisticurl. So Ride on Curlin fans, you got the first baby of Ride on Curlin's stud career. Mike, thanks so much for this.
Okay, be well.
Mike Welch, everybody. Let's take a break and come back with a visit from Rich Ang. We missed Rich last week and got to see how he's faring. There's apparently some rumors. I saw a little thing somewhere on Twitter. I was up very early this morning, like 3:30, 4:15. And I did see one of the Caesars properties or Caesars corporate. Somebody was speculating that something that they had, like a little, either a trial balloon or a missive that they had put out, speculating on potentially seeing people in June, that, you know, they're looking forward to. So maybe they've got some working ideas about, you know, figuring out how to proceed in Vegas. We'll see what Rich has to say on the topic and how he is handling things as well. Rich Ang joins us next at the races, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is...
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races to the strains of the Beths. Future me hates me. I love this. And we love talking to Rich Ang. We'll go to Vegas, where even, I mean, as tough as this is with most, you know, most businesses and most, you know, places worldwide, Las Vegas uniquely imperiled, really. And that means, you know, hotel staffs and food service staffs, and I mean anybody that is involved in a hospitality setting, and that's the entire, I mean not the entire city, because Vegas's economy is, you know, has grown and morphed you know, quite a bit. I mean, it's one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas in the country, but We all know what the engine on the train is. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. And, you know, the things that you just talked about is true. You know, we're hurt as hard and as troubled as any state, any city in the country. Tourism is our number one industry. And also the employees are in the service and the hospitality industry, and they've gone from, you know, making a good living to making no living. And even though it's nice to get these $1,200 stimulus checks, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's just a one-time thing right now. And, you know, for some of these people, $1,200 is already been spent, so to speak. So it's pretty difficult. And, you know, our road to recovery is going to be a long one. I'm not sure if your listeners out there were heard some of the comments from our Mayor Goodman, Carolyn Goodman, yesterday. She addressed the Clark County Council, the Board of Governors, and she basically said, you know, she wants to see non-essential businesses at least to some degree reopen. And you know what she's hinting at, Steve? She's not worried about the gas stations and the grocery stores, which, you know, are still open. But she's concerned about the casino industry, which is the main crux of our revenue here in Nevada. So it's still a long road, though. You know, people still have to feel comfortable about being in situations and practice social distancing and all that stuff. So I don't think there's a real appetite for generating crowds of people to get together, where the possibility of spreading this coronavirus actually would heighten due to that type of activity.
Well, a really succinct summary, Rich, of where things stand. I mean, obviously, you're working in a fairly unconventional manner anyway, you know, but you're also hamstrung undoubtedly with, you know, Southern California in limbo. There was at least, I'll use your visit, Rich, and I'm sure we'll talk about it tomorrow with Rick Hammerly too, but there was some developments in, you know, at Del Mar yesterday. A couple of different things happened that I think have people kind of hopeful. Number one, the fair said that they're not going to run. The fair is canceled, the San Diego Fair, or whatever they call it. I forget the actual title. But that, on the flip side, Del Mar expects to open even if it's without spectators. And the fact that the fair isn't going to run has got some people wondering aloud whether the opportunity to start Del Mar early, especially if Santa Anita does not get going, but that Del Mar could really pick up some of the slack. So we'll see. But Joe Harper was on the, you know, the local news yesterday, and the same thing is can be said up here at Saratoga. I mean, for people who are, you know, seemingly convinced that Saratoga is not going to run, NYRA continues to make plans, and you know, they're doing all kinds of work over there, and you know, don't know about spectators yet. You know, to me, Rich, if you're not going to have spectators at Saratoga, I don't know if it does make sense to physically come here and bring staff up here when you could just as easily run the calendar at Belmont.
Yeah, well, you know, I was following some of those headlines too, and that makes sense to me. And you know, I worked at NYRA for 7 years, so I remember. Packing up the boxes and heading up to Saratoga. Back then, when I was working, it was only a four-week season, 6 days a week. So you talk about 24 days of racing in a four-week period. That was action galore. But the expense of, as you say, of moving up there with no fans, it almost doesn't make sense. I know the local economy at Saratoga. People rent their houses to people, horsemen and employees of NYRA and things like that, and they get a lot of income from that. The restaurant and bars in town do tremendous business. But, you know, even if there was racing, there would not be any fans. And so those ancillary income revenue streams would disappear anyway. So it would almost make sense if they're going to return to racing in New York or just keep it at Belmont. And, you know, I want to touch upon the fact that, you know, there has been some discussions with the professional sports leagues. The NHL and the NBA obviously have postponed their season. They haven't canceled the season, but they postponed their season right in the thick of things, right before the playoffs started. Major League Baseball is itching to try to figure out how to get going again, and people are concerned in the NFL about if it's going to affect them, even though their opening isn't until September. But all four are looking at the model of no fans playing the games in empty stadiums and arenas. And if you segue that thought process, that idea, that actually segues beautifully into horse racing, because we can run our sport, our horse races, and if we don't have fans, well, you know, obviously that's not good, that's not great. But it's a great alternative as far as keeping that economic engine going. People can still bet using the other, you know, types of technology. So running races with no fans actually makes kind of sense to me. The only additional employees outside of the horsemen would be the 50 officials you would need to be like stewards and placing judges and the starting gate crew and medical staff, jocks room, you know, whatever number of employees. But you could practice social distancing with them to try to keep things as safe and as healthy for everybody involved. But so our sport actually would fit a model of being able to proceed, but without a fan base at the live event.
Well, and you know, clearly what is now you know, a series of weeks of continuity between Fahner and Will Rogers, Tampa, Gulfstream, and Oaklawn, and then Remington. And tomorrow, by the way, we'll be joined by Jeremy Plonk, and Jeremy is going to give everybody, the thoroughbred players, going to give you a primer on quarter horse action. And there's a very good state card tomorrow, Oklahoma bred state card, including the Oklahoma bred quarter horse Derby, as well as a couple of others, a couple of Futurity, and very nice. They've got a half a dozen stakes on the card Saturday night at Remington. So we'll do a little of that for you tomorrow with Jeremy and Steve. Anderson, too, is going to provide some perspective, and he'll give you his ideas about how to bet quarters, because he's at Los Al every night when they're running. But Rich, you know, we've said this. I mean, considering that there's so many of the employees, so many of the staff and the attendants of the horses that are going to be, you know, the horses are being trained and taken care of anyway. They're on track. They're not, you know, they're already, you know, being distanced and doing what they have to do to stay healthy. And it's a unique situation for racing. And I'm pretty confident that in this next series of racetracks that are scheduled to open, they may not open right on time, like we discussed Prairie Meadows earlier this morning, but I think you're going to start to see them, you know, make attempts, especially in markets where there's, you know, a little less an acute issue when it comes to hospitalization and fatalities. I mean, in New York, we're not doing anything until the situation is at least somewhat mitigated.
Yeah, you know, bringing it out locally out here, I know you probably heard some of the arguments that the San Anita folks are pleading to the Los Angeles County Health Department, and the fact that right across the street from San Anita is the Arboretum, and the Arboretum is open for business. And what they do to practice safe procedures is, I guess, they have a limit to the number of people who can be in the Arboretum at any one time, and they have to practice social distancing. But, you know, for them to be allowed to operate across the street, it's so hypocritical that Santa Anita is forced to close when they can actually practice the same safety procedures, health procedures, if not better than what's at the Arboretum, because there will not be any fans. There will be no attendance. So it's just, I know it's numbingly frustrating that Santa Anita is not allowed to race, but a business across the street is allowed to have patrons come in and people, you know, at the Arboretum.
No, it's preposterous. And we talked on Friday last week. We were joined by Janine Sahadi, and Janine, you know, really called it out by name, because the animal rights terrorists, they were all patting themselves on the back that they had destroyed things in Alameda County in San Francisco and here in L.A. County. You know, Doc Allred and the team in Orange County, they're not so easily cowed. And it is very odd that given the list of people in Los Angeles that you would hope had some influence, that it has not been brought to bear. I mean, if you can keep a number of people employed and you know, produce, you know, produce a product and a revenue stream for people, I it's hard to believe that you would let some, you know, completely unrelated parties influence you to derail a very viable. I mean, is it essential? I suppose not. But at the same time, it is viable and it's self-contained. And as such, there's really no reason for the Los Angeles County Health Department to be involved in this.
Well, actually, I can understand why they're involved, but I can't understand
right.
their reasoning
yes.
for the decision to close Santa Anita but allow the Arboretum to be open.
Yeah. Exactly.
And there might be a couple other examples out there, but since I'm not living in California anymore, I'm not aware of them. But, the appetite for this country, I think a lot of us are going stir crazy. And from watching the daily press briefings of President Trump, you can sense that he is itching to pull the trigger to get the country, to get the economy back going. Common sense dictates that it's not like an on-off switch on a light, but it's a gradual process. You know, practice safe procedures, social distancing and stuff like that. But, you know, if the president and a lot of the politicians want to get the economy going again to some degree, you would think this would benefit some of the racetrack folks who are trying to argue that, hey, you know, let us race because we can put more people to work. We can practice the correct social distancing and health practices and procedures. And we're doing it in front of no fans. We're not putting anybody at risk as far as that's concerned.
Exactly.
So, maybe the momentum will work in our favor as far as an industry for trying to get back on track and get some of these places going again.
Well, a big part of that has to be rectified. not to make this into a discussion, but and to be focused on Corona, but until the antibody testing is ready, and they say it's still weeks and months away from being widely distributed, until you know specifically if you're carrying the antibody having had it, until we know where we stand on that front, you can't be introducing people back into circulation. You have to have that. That's the whole point of the critique of the government's ineptitude handling all of this, is that there's the testing part of it could have been ramped up, and you'd be in a much different position in terms of making these decisions, as opposed to doing it in a vacuum, having actual understanding of how much herd immunity has been created. Instead, these people are flying blind. Frankly, we should all be just horrified at this. It's like the blow up doll in airplane, the autopilot. That's what basically we're dealing with here.
Well, if people have been following, what other countries have done to try to alleviate this scenario, the number one thing as a weapon to fight the coronavirus is testing, because you need to know
absolutely
who is positive, who is symptomatic. And, that's the thing. I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but I'm watching all these experts on television. And, they say that it's possible to actually test positive for coronavirus but not have any symptoms or show any symptoms.
Yep.
And that is scary as heck, because then that means you're like the invisible man out there if you were going back into the public not knowing that you're positive, but you're not showing any symptoms, so you wouldn't know unless you were tested.
Now, and that's, how, from that standpoint, Rich, Tina checks the maps and is watching the numbers per se. Has Vegas been a hot spot at all, or did, has things been fairly, fairly well controlled on that front? Is there a lot of cases in Vegas proper?
Well, I can address that. In fact, I'm going to knock on a piece of wood before I talk, Steve, right there. But we've actually been pretty fortunate. We are definitely at the lower end for a number of cases and number of fatalities. Obviously, one is too many fatalities, but we're on the lower end of coronavirus-related fatalities. I know from the timeline, the key date that sticks in my mind was when Governor Sisolak on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, ordered all non-essential businesses to be closed at midnight, and that means, all the casinos and stuff like that. But so all the doors were shuttered at midnight on March 17th. Now, I'm not smart enough to know if it was early, middle, or late for doing it, but it's been a month now, and our numbers have not exploded, thank goodness. Hmm. And so, you know, hopefully our governor is doing the right things. I know he's listening to what Carolyn Goodman said. I talked about what the mayor was talking about yesterday at the council meeting. But he's going to, you know, look at the data. He's going to, you know, take the advice of experts in the field and come to some decisions. But everyone's itching to get back. But so far, we've actually been pretty lucky.
How, which is amazing, considering how many, you know, how much of a crossroads it is with people coming and going, and you know, that actually, knock on wood, is a, as you said, that's excellent, because the cross pollinization aspect is really been the challenge. How you been keeping yourself busy in terms of horseplay?
Well, I do focus on the Gulfstream Park pick six. I ramp that up ever since the carryover grew over 300,000. It's now like 905,000, I believe. And so I do a pick six sheet, which is available at racedaylasvegas.com. Just go to my homepage, and I've got a link there for PayPal. And so I handicap those six races and have a simulcast play of the day. And on the weekends, I'll throw in some major stakes. We got a couple of juicy ones at Oaklawn, thank goodness, with the Apple Blossom and the Arkansas Derby. So can't wait to see those. But yeah, I'm staying busy. I'm trying to stay as busy as I can while staying indoors.
Well, and what we appreciate it and direct people to the website for Rich and racedaylasvegas.com. And one thing, Rich, I don't think anybody is going to be betting on them, but I do see some people enjoying, you know, the historic sports events that are being broadcast seemingly, you know, daily. And in fact, yesterday we had Mitch Poole, who, you know, was the clubhouse attendant and helped Kirk Gibson get ready for his home run. And Tuesday night, they played the game. They played the 88 game one. So, and I watched the Eagle last week. I watched the Eagle, Giant game, Miracle in the Meadowlands 2. Any of these old classic sporting events?
Well, I did watch the there was a replay of the Yankees Red Sox Bucky Dent game. I did.
Oh my gosh, I missed that.
Yeah, that was on a couple weeks ago. That was pretty neat. I remember that game like it happened yesterday. Here it is being replayed. But you know, Bucky Dent, for those folks who may not remember, he fouled a ball off his instep and literally was out of the batter's box for like 3 or 4 minutes. And then when he got back into the batter's box, he hit the first pitch by Mike Torres over the wall, the Green Monster, for a big home run for the Yankees. But that was great to see.
Well, and I was at Colgate, and boy, an interesting spot, because so many kids from New England, so many kids from downstate, Yankee fans, and that was a nutty week when. I just remember, who was it? Greg Finn from the tennis team. He was putting up the back page of the New York Post every day in his room. It was pretty funny. Distinctly remember that. Rich, I appreciate it. Stay safe, and you and Sandy, and we'll talk next week.
Hey, thanks, you and Tina. And I tell you what, you want me to volunteer a horse to get out today?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go for a horse in race number six at Gulfstream. Let's go for the five horse, Bourbon Currency, Dylan Davis, riding for John Kimmel. But this horse has a chance to run over the top of them late. Number five, Bourbon Currency in race six at Gulfstream.
I like it. All right, Bourbon Currency, the five and the sixth. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick. And I see Joe McKay reminding everybody, if you want to bone up, if you want to get a little bit sharper on your handicapping, reading Rich's book, Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. Order it. Read it. Live it. Dick Powell, Bill Kaplan paying tribute to Milt Wolfson, Scott Young from Oklahoma, Tony Black, Mike Welch and Rich. Thanks to Casey on the board. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, here on SiriusXM. Weekend preview should be a lot of fun, including some quarter horse action with Jeremy and a lot more. Good luck today if you're playing, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Like sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know. That soul is hard to find.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.